From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Yesterday, there was a court decision that decided that legislator pay needed to be moved to the front of the line on all of our overdue bills.
In Illinois, billionaires and machine politicians have a monopoly on political power. They fight with each other, they help each other out, and mostly they make decisions about us without us in the room. And so today, I'm announcing that I'm running for governor of Illinois because it's time to start solving problems.
Senate Democrats said that you pulled them away and said don't vote on this.
Well, that's not true, but there's a lot of misinformation out there.
The governor interceded because he didn't think the deal was right yet. Was the governor involved in this? Well, yeah, he was, but he's the governor. He gets to be involved in these things.
That, of course, is Dale Ryder, a state senator. You heard Governor Rauner and others in there talking about the grand bargain. Not much news on that this week. Doesn't appear as though that's inching anywhere closer to becoming a deal to end the budget standoff. Some big relief, I'm sure, for state taxpayers. A judge has ordered the state to issue paychecks to Illinois lawmakers. Those have been delayed. And what about state workers? Well, it looks like that effort to stop their pay faces a longer road. And another Democrat says he's in the race for governor. We'll talk about that and more today. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and joining me in studio, Charlie Wheeler. Charlie runs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. In our Statehouse studio, Brian Mackey, Illinois Public Radio Statehouse reporter. And joining us from Chicago today, Tony Arnold. He covers government and politics for WBEZ Public Radio in Chicago. Tony, good to have you on once again.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Brian, I'll start with you. The lawmaker pay lawsuit, that's been working its way through the courts, and there was some action this week. What's the latest?
The latest is that the lawmakers are getting paid. A judge ruled on Thursday of this week that after it looked like last week there was sort of a preliminary ruling where the judge seemed to be ruling against the lawmakers and then left the courtroom and came back in and said, okay, you can submit some more briefs. And then suddenly this week, after that additional briefing, the judge changed his mind from that preliminary ruling, and the controller immediately began cutting checks to legislators who have not been paid since, I think, maybe but once since last summer. Controller now is a Democrat, Susana Mendoza. Republican Party wasted no time in attacking her, saying you should have appealed right away instead of cutting this paycheck. But there is precedent for her action back in, I think it was, 2013, when Governor Pat Quinn, a Democrat, vetoed legislator paychecks. And a court ruled that was wrong and that legislators should get paid. Then Controller Judy Bartopinka, who was a Republican, also immediately began implementing the judge's orders and cutting checks to lawmakers.
Tony, let's take us back a little bit to how this all began. This happened last year during a special election for the state's controller office, and the Leslie Munger, the Republican who held that office at the time, was the one that, I guess she didn't stop payment to lawmakers, she just put them rather at the back of the line with a lot of other people having to wait to get their pay.
Right. And, this is one of those things where it's rare that you see the comptroller of Illinois making the headlines, but that's the power of a budget impasse puts the comptroller front and center here. So she made the decision, Munger at the time, then comptroller, who was, as you said, the appointee to the position from Rauner. She made this decision that said, if we have this budget impasse and only a certain amount of we only have so much money on hand at any given month, it depends on the month and what kind of taxes are coming in, depending on how much money we have to spend, then I'm not going to say hospitals, you have to wait a little bit longer because I have to pay the salaries for state lawmakers. And so she had this flashy press conference and lots of it turned into this whole campaign issue. It polled so well that even, her Democratic opponent, Susana Mendoza, was on board with this also. It became this slogan from both candidates saying, no budget, no pay. And, that just led to from one thing to another here that after the election was over and Mendoza won, then six House members, all Democrats, sued the comptroller to say, no, you can't withhold, or not withhold, but you can't delay our paychecks like this. That's not constitutional. And after this legal wrangling back and forth, the comptroller's attorney was saying, actually, the comptroller does have the discretion to do this because we're in this budget impasse. There's only so much money that we have at one time, and there's other court orders that dictate how much, where we spend the money. There's continuing appropriations. There's consent decrees. We don't have say over a lot of this money, where this money goes. She needs to be able to say this to comply with these other rulings. The judge, though, the Cook County judge, that wasn't enough. He said, no, you can't. It's the comptroller does not have the discretion to delay these payments. So it was a win for the lawmakers to get their paychecks.
Charlie, I'm sure if I went out onto the street and said to somebody, these poor lawmakers, they're not getting their money, people would cry a lot of tears for that, I'm sure. But you take a different viewpoint on this of why it is a concern to see these checks held up the way that they were.
Well, I guess the viewpoint I take is that I read the statute, and I'm somebody who believes that the statute should be followed. And it's pretty clear. And the background, and this goes back a long ways, once upon a time, if you were elected to the General Assembly, you got paid the full salary on your first day in office. And there were instances of people who didn't serve out their full two-year term, in the case of House members or 4 years for senators, took the money up front and left. And so as a reform, the law was changed to say that lawmakers would get paid once a month, and that's what the statute says. Later it was made to be, after what Quinn tried to do, to deny paychecks as a way to kind of bludgeon legislatures into doing what he wanted. It was added that this is a continuing appropriation. The governor can't veto it, and it has to do with the separation of powers. The notion that the executive branch should not have kind of the ability to extort the legislative branch by saying, you won't get paid unless you do X, Y, or Z. And in the case of Pat Quinn, it was unless you pass this pension reform that I want. And in the case of the comptrollers, both Munger, Republican, Mendoza, Democrat, it was unless you enact a budget. And what the court said was, well, here's what the law says, and you just have to follow the law. So I think it was politically unpopular to follow the law, but I think it's the right thing to do.
And Brian, before we move on to some other things, two questions here. One is, it sounded as though Mendoza indicated she would appeal or try to appeal this decision. And then secondly, can you talk about that? And then also the situation by this was, I guess, considered to be some leverage for the governor in his push to try to get a budget through the legislature. Does this set back his efforts? Does it set back the effort at large for getting a budget in the state?
Well, taking those in order, I think it is. I think the comptroller has said that, you know, she sort of deferred to the attorney general's office, who said that it was reviewing the decision, although, you know, she campaigned heavily enough on this that it would, I guess, not redound to her political benefit if she suddenly decided to let this go. And certainly we've already seen the Republican Party going after her and Attorney General Lisa Madigan on these points. Whether it helps or hurts the governor's efforts, there were a lot of legislators who were sort of really financially stretched. I mean, sure, there are lawyers, there are retired private equity investors in government. I mean, Governor Rauner had $186 million in income last year, I think. Former comptroller Leslie Munger, who was hired by the Rauner administration, along with 28 or so of her former staffers. She has a lot of money. She's a former businesswoman, executive, and they're not necessarily hurting, but, you know, we heard stories of one legislator was driving an Uber car to make ends meet. If you've got a couple of kids in college, this is your only source of income, going the better part of a year without any money was pretty challenging. So if this sort of takes the pressure off them personally to feel like they need to get a budget deal, well, then I guess that maybe that would not work towards getting a budget deal. But, you know, it hadn't worked in the last practically a year that this has been going on now. So I'm not sure how much, you know, were we just around the corner from them being squeezed into voting for something they don't want to vote for? I'm not sure that's realistic.
Well, another move that could possibly impact the budget negotiations would be if state employees are not getting paid, and the attorney general has made an effort to go to court to possibly at least try to stop the employee paychecks from going out. This week, she had appealed all the way to the Supreme Court, skipping the appellate court. But this week, the Supreme Court said, not so fast. Tony and Brian, you know, feel free to weigh in on that. What's this mean for this issue? Does this delay this, you know, for several months? Is this not going to be an issue here in the spring session? What, you know, what's happening with it?
I think just in terms of the legal process, yeah, it goes to the appellate court, but this is an indication of where this is going to end up one way or another. Just a question of timing. Is it, this is going to go to the Supreme Court, you know, whatever the verdict is here. It's just a matter of how long it takes to get there. So the fact that the Supreme Court didn't take this issue directly, this isn't the first time they've said on budget-related judicial action that they've said, well, let's see what the appellate court does first, because there have been, I can't even keep track of how many lawsuits are out there now about something related to the budget. The social services that have contracts with the state and haven't been paid, they sued, and dozens of them sued for their money, and they lost in Cook County Court. So they asked the Supreme Court to weigh in on a faster timeline, and the Supreme Court said no, go to the appellate court. So that's what they're doing. This is just another example of that. Where the Supreme Court said, well, state employees, you know, you're going to keep getting paid, but for now, take it to the appellate court. So it's just one more delay. The other thing I'd say is just, you know, going back a little bit to what Brian was just saying, like, I guess what I'm surprised about is I didn't realize that the state lawmakers hadn't been paid since they just got their paychecks from last July. This is, you know, we're at the end of March now. So it's almost been, they're almost 9 months behind schedule here in getting their salaries. And it's just another indication of how far behind in its bills and paying its bills the state is at this point. We're at $13 billion of a backlog. And it's just, the timeline is just extraordinary to see.
Charlie, on this case with the attorney general and the state employee paychecks, you just mentioned earlier you feel free to follow the statutes. You think people should do that. I'm assuming you feel the same way in this situation, that the statutes are clear that without an appropriation, with no budget in place for this, that the employee shouldn't be paid?
Well, I think it's in the Constitution, not just in the law. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, there was a Supreme Court ruling, what, Brian, was it 2 years ago now or three, about back pay that was owed under an AFSCME contract. And the court said you can't pay it without an appropriation, the Supreme
That's
Court
right,
held. Am I recalling that correctly?
Yeah. The present case, the parties, AFSCME and the governor's office, try to distinguish that by saying, well, that was about a multi-year contract, and it wasn't just as much of a general pronouncement as people think. But other people, yourself included, have looked at that and said, well, yeah, that's just sort of restating the obvious, which is in the Constitution, which is, no money can be spent without a legal appropriation from the legislature.
Or a court order requiring it.
Right.
The thing that I find interesting in this is how it's such a political battle, and the combatants don't realize what the damage is that's being done to people who don't have the resources of, say, a wealthy investor, or someone who's a very successful lawyer, like the Speaker of the House, Michael Madigan. Little people out there who rely on state services, people who are dealing with problems, substance abuse, domestic abuse, children with disabilities, homelessness, all the kind of things that, thank the Lord, those of us on this panel don't have to face, and they rely on the state help, and it's like they're just invisible in this whole debate. This is this partisan grudge match between Rauner and Madigan, and the folks who should be the focus of attention are sort of like collateral damage, and it's very disheartening.
Let me also want to move on to one other court's move this week, and that is the governor directly appealing in this AFSCME impasse case. And for a little bit of background on that, Brian, why don't you fill us in and what's happening with that?
Yeah, and this is the governor basically doing the same thing that Lisa Madigan, Attorney General Madigan, was doing in the other case, which is saying that this is a matter of extreme public importance and it would benefit the people of Illinois in order to circumvent the usual appellate process. There's a constitutional issue here that's going to have to be resolved by the Supreme Court eventually. And you know, there's actually a Supreme Court Rule 302B, not to get too in the weeds here, but it's cases in which the public interest requires expeditious determination. And the idea is from the administration on their contract case is that they've convinced a state labor board that AFSCME and the administration are at impasse, and that case is now working its way through the court system. The administration says they want the Supreme Court to step in and decide because there was a preliminary ruling from the appellate court that said, you know, AFSCME's got a pretty good shot at winning here, so we're not going to let the administration impose their contract terms on union members and state employees. And for full disclosure, because of, you know, I think Sean, Charlie, and myself work for the University of Illinois, we would be subject to the same sort of healthcare rules that they're trying to push through and rate increases and things like that. But, you know, the administration says we could be saving a lot of money by imposing those terms now and let the case play out. AFSCME is obviously fighting that, and they are asking the Supreme Court to say, you know, just step in, take the case out of the appellate court, and rule more quickly on this, which is basically the same argument that Lisa Madigan used. The Supreme Court turned her down for that in terms of the state employee pay. We're still waiting to hear what the justices have to say about the Rauner administration's attempt to use this same expedited process for the AFSCME contract case.
Tony, I mean, this seems like a lot of dominoes are out there. That any of them could fall could trigger some real chaos in state government. But for now, things continue along and these court, legal arguments at least play themselves out, and they could take quite a while to do that.
They can't. I mean, this is at this point, you know, more actions happening in court than it is in the state house. It's kind of crazy how many different judicial orders or different lawsuits are at play and moving all kind of separately but toward the same direction here all at the same time. You have something like 10 different tracks here of different legal cases going on, whether it's something like whether a state employee should receive their salary at all, or whether state lawmakers, when they should receive their pay, or whether it's like just paying for services like Medicaid. All of these are existing right now because of a judge's decision. And so it's just this weird mix of consent decrees when a federal judge is basically monitoring the quality of services that the state government provides, or whether it's, you know, actual lawsuits. I mean, keep in mind that, you know, it wasn't that long ago Illinois was on the Daily Show because we weren't paying lottery winners because of the budget impasse. So that was a lawsuit for briefly a brief amount of time. That's just where this is, and another sign of how unprecedented this whole budget impasse situation is. And it's not even the end of it. I mean, Chicago Public Schools just filed its lawsuit over the school funding formula. So that's going to be a new round of lawsuits there. It's just going on and on in terms of this legal fights, really, instead of policy, public policy or legislative fights.
I would add to what Tony was saying that this is all just because the people in government, both legislators and the governor, have not really had to face the consequences of their inaction in the last 2 years. We've seen in Washington, people say, we're not going to negotiate on the budget until we do these other items that we want to get passed. And so we're going to shut down the government. And then the national parks close and you have veterans who can't get to visit the World War II memorial on their honor flight. And, you know, Social Security offices close and people really start to notice, and there are stories. And I remember when this happened a few years ago, I was doing stories here in Springfield about the Lincoln home closing and calling the U.S. Attorney's Office and figuring out whether they'd have to stop doing enforcement and things like that. And in state government, we have had these series of through court orders. I mean, there's a judge in St. Clair County, Lachine, who is, the attorney general has pointed out, has basically single-handedly authorized about $3 billion in spending on state employee pay over the last couple of years. We've had a couple of other court orders that have mandated spending. And because there's this sort of veneer of normality in Illinois government, if you get into an accident, the state police will respond. We haven't had prison riots yet. There's this veneer of normality. People don't think it's that big a problem. And the politicians have never really had to face the consequences of their failure to pass a budget. And I think it's been engineered this way. They've been working to keep it this way. Every step they do that, and former Governor Jim Edgar has said this, every time you do a stopgap or something that keeps things afloat, you just make a full, truly balanced, real budget deal that much further down the road.
And Charlie, I know a lot of people haven't been impacted, like Brian was saying, by this impasse still. Yet you see polls that have come out, the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute out with one recently showing pretty high disapproval numbers for especially the House Speaker Michael Madigan and the governor, Bruce Rauner. There may be another factor in that, is in the sense that it's not just whether or not I'm impacted by the budget. It's that I don't see anything good coming out of state government. They have given me no reason to put faith into the government that runs this state. Do you think that maybe there's this morass out there that just continues on and maybe has continued on all the way since Rod Blagojevich especially was governor?
Yeah, I would suspect that people who aren't directly affected by the impasse, in the same way that people who rely on some of these services almost as a life-saving, with life-saving impact, I would guess that they look at it as kind of like, well, this doesn't personally affect me, but I just think it's terrible what's going on and that these bozos can't do something as simple as enacting a budget. All they have to do is cut all that waste and abuse that exists in state government and we'd be fine. That's sort of the attitude of, in a sense, the observer who's not directly impacted or who really hasn't focused on this the same way that reporters covering it do. And so there's this general feeling that, yeah, we're going in the wrong direction, which all the polling says is the sentiment of most Illinoisans. And you hear stories of people leaving the state. Our population in the metropolitan area, Chicago area, declined or is declining, and more so than any other metropolitan area in the country based on numbers. And so there's a sense that something's wrong, but it really doesn't affect me in my personal life, so I'm not going to get too worked up about it. I'll just kind of put it out of mind. What would change is if one of these pressure points suddenly came to pass. For example, if there were no budget for elementary and secondary education and schools didn't open on time in August. Or, as was mentioned earlier, if you go to get your driver's license renewed and suddenly there's nobody there. Things that would impact a broader range of people. Then the folks who suddenly feel the impact would go to the lawmaker and say, look, you got to do something. And ultimately, the lawmakers on both sides of the aisle would go to their principals. The Republicans who are controlled by the governor would go to the governor and say, look, we got to do something. The Democrats who answer to Michael Madigan would say, look, we got to do something. And that kind of grassroots uprising would get the problem resolved.
Well, and they did try to do something, I guess you could say, the grand bargain. Brian, you reported this week, you went back and talked to a lot of Republican lawmakers who at one point seemed as though they were in support of that grand bargain, and then they weren't. What did you find? And this really gets to the heart of whether Governor Rauner was involved in helping to spike that deal.
Yeah, I was surprised to learn that as many as 10 of the 22 Republicans in the Illinois Senate had voted for at least one part of the grand bargain. Some of them only voted for one, some voted for as many as five. And this was back February 28th. There was going to be 2 days of voting. The next day they came in and Republican leader Christine Redonio told the Democrats, I'm going to be the only yes vote today. And the Democrats said that the governor had been, they heard from Republicans that the governor had been calling people in and threatening them and pulling votes off at least. Now, I was not able to substantiate the idea that that the governor was threatening people. In fact, everybody I spoke to said that they had no idea who it was that, you know, claimed they were being threatened. There were three people that, did not respond to my requests to talk to them out of the 10. But out of the others, most of them said they had either talked to the governor himself or had heard from the governor's staff. Some of them said, you know, I wasn't ready to vote for him because I'm never going to vote for a tax increase. It's just not something I think the state needs to do right now. But other ones definitely said that, you know, the governor conveyed a message. The governor interceded, somebody said. And another one said that the, you know, the governor just didn't think the deal was right. And it caused us to reconsider, it caused some people to reconsider. There was a lot of people treading very carefully. Nobody likes to get on the wrong side of a governor who's put $50 million in his campaign account and has shown a willingness to use it against members of his own party in the past. But it's certainly, I think it's difficult now to accept the governor at face value when he says that he, you know, just wants them to get a deal and he's encouraging them to get a deal and he did not, you know, weigh in and pull votes off. Certainly people say that he at least conveyed a message and interceded. So you can make of that what you will.
Well, Democrats are lining up to run against the governor. Just a few seconds left here. Tony, can you tell us a little bit about the latest to jump into the race, apparently, and that is the state senator Daniel Biss.
Yeah, State Senator Daniel Biss, who is from Chicago's northern suburbs, represents Evanston and areas around there. He made his official jump into the governor's race for the Democratic nomination, at least, earlier this week through a Facebook Live announcement. And after he announced it, then he ended up actually just taking comments, questions and comments from people who were watching on there for about 20 minutes, kind of just launching through his bullet points of his campaign and what we expect to see. What was noteworthy to me is not only is he talking about a graduated income tax rate as opposed to a flat income tax right now that Illinois has, but also just talking about taking on, you know, the system and corrupt politicians and that kind of thing, which mirrors how a lot of politicians these days are talking, whether it's about Springfield or D.C. or just about anywhere else. He's kind of striking that chord there that's clearly must be polling well with people, that kind of language.
All right. Time for our notes from the field. Charlie, we'll start with you.
Well, we talked about how the state's bill backlog is in the billions. The last time I checked earlier today, it was $12.6 billion. But a couple of Democratic legislators from Chicago, from the north side, have introduced legislation that would legalize the recreational use of marijuana. It would allow people to possess up to an ounce, have five plants growing at home, and they say it could produce as much as $700 million in revenue. Now, when you're $12.5 billion in the hole, $700 million is a help, but there's still a long way to go.
And Brian?
There was a, you're going to be hearing more probably about this, but Cook County had the biggest population loss of any county in America, or at least among the biggest. But a couple of Tony's colleagues at WBEZ pointed out some interesting caveats in their coverage of this, which is that if you have a big county, you're going to have big raw numbers. And in fact, the overall population decline rate, percentage rate, was not that big. It's much more comparable to, say, Allegheny County in Pittsburgh, they reported, or Cuyahoga County in Cleveland. So sometimes the raw numbers can be deceiving, and you have to dig a little bit deeper.
All right, and we're out of time for this week. Our members of our broadcast are Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, Tony Arnold, and you can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. Our production assistance provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.